This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, this is RÚV English Radio. My name's Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company today. It's a Monday. It's time for another episode of The Week in Iceland, where we do exactly what that label suggests. We go back through the last 7 days in Iceland, and it really does feel as if the news agenda is starting to ramp up again after those lengthy summer holidays. My guest today, my colleague here at RÚV, Sebastian Guðmundsson. Sebastian, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome to RÚV English Radio. And we start with a story that really has caught the imagination of a lot of people, not just here in Iceland, but around the world as well. And I know that you've got an interest in this, being a fisherman yourself. You were out fishing at the weekend. This is the story of what appears to be the escaped farmed salmon week into an Icelandic river.
Yeah.
So where are we on this then? Because I think over the weekend it was discovered that things maybe aren't quite as bad as feared.
So there was some development in the weekend that turned out, at first everybody were panicking. Yeah. They thought that maybe hundreds, maybe thousands, like, I don't know, but maybe hundreds of farmed salmon had escaped into the wild. But then the development in the weekend was that it was more of pink salmon instead of the wild salmon, which everybody thought. I have not looked into how much of it was pink salmon or if it's known, but it was not as bad as people thought.
And the reason that this matters, again, for anyone outside of the country, maybe, the reason this is important is that these farmed salmon, they're genetically different.
Yeah.
They are treated with chemicals.
Oh, yeah.
And they are also potentially likely to outbreed the wild salmon. So there's all sorts of reasons why this is a bad thing.
So that their DNA, when that matches with a wild salmon, because the farmed salmon are just brought up in these huge nets in the sea, and they know nothing. They just swim around in circles.
Yes.
So they know nothing about, you know, living in the wild. So if their DNA matches with the wild salmon's DNA, then the wild salmon gets weaker, and that could evaporate the wild salmon's existence.
Yes, yes.
Because slowly over time, their DNA becomes so weak that they cannot live in the wild.
So it's very bad news. And it's also something that I think a lot of people have feared might happen for a long time. There's a lot of concern in Iceland, I think other countries too, perhaps, for these reasons.
Yeah, definitely.
About sea farmed salmon, particularly.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether this changes anything. As you say, there's still a lot to uncover about what's actually happened here and how bad it is.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that those conversations will start to take place again about banning this?
100%. I think the people that are fishing the wild salmon, they are pretty angry at this, and they are panicking as well. I think definitely there has to be some sort of conversation had. I think the government probably need to do something, step in.
Mm.
And in 2 years ago, I don't know if you know, there was a huge protest where this happened. Farmed salmon escaped into the wild. And people got together in Östervöllur, in front of the Alþingishús, and they were angry.
Mm.
They were very angry about the government. But now it happened only 2 years since it happened, and it happened again. So I think fish farmers and people are going to want answers, going to want changes.
So nothing changed then after the protests?
I don't think so.
No. One of the fishing associations, quite interestingly, obviously very concerned by what has happened.
Yeah.
And they have stacked stones, a wall of stones,
oh, yeah,
in one of the rivers to try to prevent this, you know, because we don't know how far these salmon are going to get, basically. Mm-hmm. This is in Húnaþingvestra.
Yeah.
And the chair of the fishing association at that river says, we had these rocks, we gathered together people with machines, wagons, and an excavator. The rocks were available, everyone was ready to take part. It's been a huge community effort here to build up these stones. And you think, well, are stones in the river going to stop these salmon? Apparently they will, because wild salmon, didn't know this, wild salmon are better at doing the high jump than farmed salmon.
Ah, that's an interesting fact.
I didn't know.
I was also thinking, won't they just jump over it? But
no,
not
apparently
the farm
not.
Salmon. That might be because they just live in the circle net.
Maybe, because as you say, they don't know how to do anything, include jumping, the poor thing. So we think maybe that this wall is about a meter in height. Wild salmon jumps about three times its body length, but the farmed salmon is half of the wild salmon, so it shouldn't be able to get over the wall.
That's very interesting.
Let's hope that theory doesn't need to be tested.
No, let's not hope that.
Let's not hope that. Okay, so that's
the story is still in development. So
the story is developing, and hopefully in a good direction, because it appeared to be very bad news on Friday, I think, or probably before that, when this story actually broke. Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to turn to Reynisfjara, which was the site of a very tragic incident, of course, quite recently, where a 9-year-old girl died on the beach there. These beaches have incredibly strong waves. I think there is no land, indeed, between that stretch of beach and Antarctica. So the waves come straight up from the southern hemisphere. And as I say, as you'll be aware by now, the tragedy of a 9-year-old girl dying there. Talk, of course, of doing what is possible to limit people's access to the beach. But I guess that even if you close it off, and even if you fence it off, and even if you do all of that, the nature of the coastline in Iceland means that people, if they're determined enough, are going to get down to the beach, aren't they?
100%. And I also think the tourists might be a little bit too irresponsible when it comes to these things, because as you say, the sea levels there, it is dangerous. Mm. I don't think they fathom how dangerous it could be.
No.
I mean, we can see that a poor nine-year-old girl lost her life. Maybe that will spark something in the head of the tourists, and they will get, okay, maybe I don't need to go that close.
Yes. But I think the problem with that beat, or problem with this situation is, as you say, people don't fathom how dangerous it is, because they think, well, why would it be? It's a beach.
Yeah, right.
You know, we go to beaches all over the world and there are waves and it's fine, but this one is different.
Oh, it's very different. And I think there need to be tourists need to be more up to date about it. But I think also when you are a tourist, maybe you don't know anything about the country, you're just, oh, nice sea, nice beach. Mm. And you walk out to it, oh, it's great.
And it's black, of course, which is novel. So you think, this is interesting. I'll spend some time here. It is possible to enjoy that beach safely.
Of course.
But you're going to need lots of information. You're going to need tourists to be well informed. Yeah. And it's another question of who has the responsibility. Is it the landowners? Is it the municipality? Is it the tourist organization? Do you think that maybe everyone's got a role here?
Oh, definitely. It definitely needs to be in hand of the people that control it, but also on the tourists, because they need to be on cautious for their own safety. You need to think about yourself when you go to these places, but definitely needs to be a sign up there that says the basic information about the dangers.
There is a warning system in place, and the red light is now going to, as we've discussed before, it's going to come on earlier in the process. Yeah. It's going to come on more often, so hopefully people will pay attention.
Definitely. And also maybe just need to, not educate themselves, but look more into it before they go there.
For sure.
And that applies to every national treasure or something.
Because many of them are potentially dangerous here in Iceland. Definitely. We've talked about eruptions, of course. It seems like we've talked about little else sometimes over the last few years.
I mean, Gullfoss, for example.
Yes.
I went there this summer.
Yeah.
You are just right up to the edge of Gullfoss when you look at it.
Well, it's striking that you mentioned Gullfoss, because when we first came to Iceland as tourists in 1998... I don't think even the infrastructure that is there now was there then.
And
you could walk right, as you say, right up to the very edge, but probably without any warnings or any indication that you're in a potentially dangerous place. And the last time I was there, which was about 2 months ago, it was very wet and still cold. Mm-hmm. And the path, you know, there's a path that clings to the side, which I guess is safe enough when it's warm and dry. Mm-hmm. But that was closed at that point. Now, there would have been a time that I think that path would have been open all of the time. Mm-hmm. So there's some recognition now.
Okay, that's good.
Tourist sites.
Of course.
That there needs to be some limitation, some kind of information that maybe wasn't necessary 25 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely been some development in that, safety. But I also think that when you are a tourist and see this beautiful landmark, you see Gullfoss, it's amazing. You look at it. Mm-hmm. And then maybe your safety precautions just go out the window.
Yes.
You're so blown away. Definitely, yeah.
And also, if you see other people in the dangerous areas, you might think, well, if they're there, maybe it's not very dangerous.
Exactly.
In Borgarfjörður, 16 cows died.
Yeah.
Slurry was being stirred in the manure pit beneath the cowshed. One scientist says there's also a risk of this when stirring the slurry because of poisonous gases. And a couple of people responded on Roof English to this by saying, well, if there's always a risk, then take the cows out of the shed before you stir the slurry.
I mean, you would think so, but there must be some reason why it hasn't.
9 cows, indeed, died in Blaskabith in 2014 because of gas pollution, and another 6 died at the turn of the millennium. People can become ill as well from these gases.
Okay. I mean, there must be some reason why he doesn't take the cows out. Otherwise, it sounds too simple.
I assume it's faster not to.
If he knows the risk of 16 cows dying,
yeah,
then maybe he should do it. Or maybe we just need to look a little bit better into it.
Or maybe that's something that's now going to happen.
Yeah, maybe.
Are you a fan of Kolaportis, which is the market in the city centre here in Reykjavik?
Am I a fan?
Okay, let me rephrase that. Have you been to Kolaportis?
I have been to Kolaportis. Okay. Of course. I have been, not many times, but a couple of times.
How would you describe it to somebody who's never been?
Honestly, my experience, it was not good.
Why?
I went maybe 3-4 years ago.
Okay.
It was very sloppy. Mess everywhere. It was just not a pleasant experience walking in there.
Is that part of the appeal, though? Because for anyone who doesn't know, it's what you might in other countries call a flea market.
Yeah.
There's a lot of secondhand stuff that people have decided to sell. It is a bit ramshackle. You go in and it feels quite random.
Yep.
But I like that.
I mean, flea markets can be beautiful, though. I mean, when I walked in Amsterdam and there was a flea market outside. It was so pleasant. It was so nice and amazing products, amazing food, bakery. But when I walk in Kolaportið, I don't think that's pretty beautiful. I've never thought that when I walked in there.
Yeah, maybe beautiful is not a word that you would use then to describe it. But I think the other complimentary terms you can use, interesting is one.
It is interesting.
Charming, I think, is another one.
Yeah.
There are lots of people selling new crafts.
Yeah, of course.
As well. There's a stall that I'm a huge Christmas fan. There's someone selling Christmas decorations all year round. I approve of that very strongly. You can get food and drink. The food and drink offer has definitely improved, I think, in recent years.
Definitely.
The reason we're talking about this is that the city of Reykjavik has reached an agreement with the company Gotabiti to operate Kolaportis for the next 5 years, because it was at some risk, wasn't it, at the start of the year, and the future wasn't entirely sure. Yeah. Now we know that it's safe in those hands for the next 5 years, and the company are planning to keep what it is at its heart, keep its legacy at heart.
And although I was describing it like that, I don't want to see it die. It needs to be up and running.
It needs to be up and running.
It's just a huge part of Reykjavik.
Do you think you might be tempted back then?
Oh, definitely. I will check it out. Yes. 100%. I remember when I walked in there, I felt so cramped. It felt so close. And I felt like I was, I don't know, so next to people.
It's very popular. That's why. There's loads of people there, I think. Yeah.
But I want to see it more open and more, as I said about Amsterdam, more beautiful.
More beautiful.
A more pleasant feeling when you walk in.
There are going to be 2 to 3 restaurants in there, a cafe and a bar, indoor play area for children, a grocery store and a market. There's already a food hall, you could say, in there. And improved premises for the tenants who go there every week and sell their wares. So it sounds like there is a plan to improve Kolaportis. Or should we say Kolaportis even further?
Nice.
Can I say that as a fan of the place?
Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
I mean, that sounds very good. That sounds like a very good upgrade.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to look forward to in Kolaportis. If you are in town, you want to see what we're talking about. Currently, it's open between 11 and 5 every Saturday and Sunday, just at weekends, sometimes during the red days, sometimes during the holidays as well. But I think one of the other plans is for it to open more regularly or more often.
I mean, that's a good business plan to have it open.
Yeah.
I think that's a good business plan.
That's better than something being closed.
I suppose.
Okay, let me turn to a story which puzzled people for a lot of time here in Iceland. Mm-hmm. This is the blue fire hydrant.
And must I say, it puzzled me as well.
So have you seen it in the flesh? Have you seen it in real life?
I have not seen it. Okay. I must admit, I didn't even know about it before I saw this.
Okay, it's been standing on Sprengisandur for years and no one knew why it was there.
Okay.
There's a group called Hanavinir, which means friends of the hydrant.
Okay.
Which is not a phrase you'd need to translate if you're learning Icelandic terribly often. How do I say friends of the hydrant in Icelandic? They admitted to having installed this hydrant. They've been taking care of its maintenance. They're all very committed to remaining anonymous, so we don't know who these people are. But we now know that it's gone missing, and so they're appealing for its return.
Okay.
So my question to you, Sebastian, is do you know where the hydrant is?
Hey. I don't. But I have a question as well.
Okay.
I mean, were they breaking any laws by putting it there? Because I think
unless they stole the hydrant, I don't think so.
Yeah, because they want to stay anonymous. Yes. They don't want to say who they are. But I don't see how it's illegal.
It doesn't appear to be illegal to put one there. Yeah. I think it might be illegal, as I say, if they'd stolen it, but there's no suggestion that they did. So let's assume that they bought or legally acquired the hydrant.
Or made it, possibly.
Possibly. And took it to Sprengisandur and left it there. That's all legal. That's all fine as far as I can tell.
Okay.
What doesn't seem to be legal is the theft of it.
Yeah. I also want... Is there somebody gone there and took it? And no one's seen it?
Well, somebody must have taken it.
I mean, it doesn't blow away.
It doesn't blow away.
It's a fire hydrant.
Even if it fell over and rolled away, I mean, it's not going to roll very far because it's got like a, it's got the thing where you put the hose in sticking out of the side, so it's not going to roll
far. Probably see the tracks as well.
Yeah. I don't think animal life is responsible for its
definitely not
for its removal. So yeah, I'm thinking that somebody has taken it.
I mean, it must be.
Yeah.
This is an
I don't yet know, as we sit here on Monday the 18th of August, just after 12:30 as we have our conversation, whether the hydrant has been found, but at the moment it certainly doesn't appear to have been. Perhaps, say the anonymous friends of the hydrant, perhaps we should just start a petition for people to sign to get the hydrant back and then we'll consider it. And that would be them considering, I should say, the possibility of putting up another one in the same location.
Okay. You gotta get the original one.
Yeah.
You gotta find it.
That's true. But I'm also thinking, that means they've got a spare hydrant.
Oh.
Maybe. Do you think, because this is an art project?
Yeah, maybe.
By the friends of the hydrant. Do you think maybe they've removed it so they can replace it themselves? Is this all part of the artistic act?
Are they bringing attention to it?
Yes.
Wow.
That's what I'm thinking now. Mind blown.
Wow, my mind is blown. I mean, everybody's talking about it. We're talking about it.
It does seem to be the case that everyone is talking about the missing blue hydrant. So if you've seen it, by all means, get in touch with us here at Roof. We'll make sure it is returned to its rightful home, even if that is on Spengler's under. A blue hydrant, which was an art installation, not known who's behind it going missing, and it hasn't yet returned. That's all we can say with any certainty about this rather strange story.
We'll keep you updated.
We'll keep you updated with the fate of the hydrant and the friends of the hydrant as well. I'm not sure if you can join the friends of the hydrant. I think you've got to be one of them to begin.
Yeah, I think so. Since they're anonymous.
They are anonymous, yes. There's not really a website you can go to, as far as I'm aware. Okay, Sebastian, thanks very much indeed. We'll talk again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Sebastian Guthmundsson, my colleague here at Roof, on this episode of The Week in Iceland. My name's Darren Adam, and you can get in touch anytime. We're English at ruv.is.
There is more from Roof English, with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. Roof English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, Roof.